piece, Touchpoint, which has come out of their work and out of their exploration. They're going to be doing it here in Studio C tonight at 8:30. And this might be a good time to say also that later this week, Wednesday and Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, that's the 22nd and 23rd, Wednesday and Thursday night at 8, you can see Touchpoint at Westbeth. I think a lot of people know where that's at, 155 Bank Street. So, done all that stuff. You know, in the very beginning, we heard what we call a cart, which is a taped plug, I guess, that we do, that Penny and Jane did last Saturday, which we've been playing over the weekend to tell people about it. And in that, you did Something Is Burning, which is, and I wonder if we could just talk about that, how that comes about.
Does anybody remember how that happened? It just seems a really typical picture of what happens in group situations or in relationships where there's unconscious power happening. Do you remember? It was funny. We were laughing a lot, I think, when we discovered it. But I don't remember.
That the conversation actually came up, you mean, and then somebody wrote it down?
What happened was we were up at the next thing, and the gas was on. Glow was there, and Glow, and it was between you and Glow, where Glow said, "Roz, I think your coat is burning," or something like that. So we got up and went over to the gas thing, and then you turned around and you said, "Wait a minute, Glow." And that's how it came out. It was something like that, because I remember Glow being there, and I remember, like, having... It was something between the two of you, and you actually did it, and then we all caught it and put it down.
Huh. Yeah, the other way that comes up is, we should really go out and get some food.
Mm-hmm. Right,
who's the we, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We need to get the car inspected.
We need to clean the kitchen, wash the dishes, mm-hmm. pick up the kids.
Gee, you know, it'd be a good idea.
We need.
Yeah. Some of these.
Would you like some coffee? No, that's not quite in the same place, I guess.
Mm-mm.
It was slightly over in.
Sure. Yeah, but that's the same.
Are you thirsty?
It's close.
Yeah.
It's close.
With nothing in the house, you got to go out and buy something.
Right.
Yeah.
So you go and
talking
it.
Somebody else into really wanting a pizza, and then
saying, "Well, you could make it."
But
here are the keys to my car.
Yeah, that's not quite like in Something Burning. It's an unconscious move where. It's someone saying, "I smell this," and the other going to carry out, to act out what the other person has kind of demanded, but not the realization that it's a demand or a command, nor the realization that you're accepting the command or demand.
Then you both realize
it. Right.
Yeah. And we chose to play it that way so that it would be mutual. You both realize that you had messed up, not that one person in the relationship is the... mess her over, and the other is a messy. Where something's happening.
Could you, in fact, play that one all three ways? Could this Something Burning being played so that the person who smells the Something Burning
yeah.
is the manipulator,
yeah.
plus the smelly or whatever the person
yeah.
who smells?
Sometimes it could. It's like the beginning of a huge fight. You know, if the person says, "Well, I was busy." Right, and the other person says, "Well, so was I." Why? Or it could yeah. be like,
"I always get up for you."
Right. I did it last time.
Right. Then you get into the whole who owes who and.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah. what's busy, you know, like what you call busy might not be what somebody else calls busy, you know. So you could look at the person and say, "You were busy, ha." Huh?
Just sitting
forget
there.
It.
Oh, there's
right.
Like,
right.
Remember that poem that we read? When you were doing all that research about women's poetry, and there was a poem that a woman had written about, there was a group of men sitting around, and she was in the studio next to the living room, and she was painting, and then something came up, and people started to talk about really getting hungry, or something like that, and she stopped painting and went in and started doing, and then. And she like left it right there almost, you know, and just with that realization that they continued their conversation and that she just unconsciously put down what she was doing and went and did, you know, what was needed for people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that, it's a lot catching that those unconscious moves, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the area of consciousness just keeps growing and growing and growing a lot. When we play...
Crazy.
Do you look crazy? Right, you do. Then we have a piece called Crazy, and part of the piece is called Crazy. Somehow you're crazy, but you keep on going all right.
Is that towards the end?
Yeah. Isn't that sort of the transition point between the two pieces?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, like, all the exploration is really amazing and really fun, but you also need to know how to give yourself relaxation and rest from it too, because it can get, for me, it can get really overbalanced inside my head, you know, that if I'm constantly working on my relationships with people or constantly working on who I am inside those relationships, then I need to find some way of getting my strength to keep on going. And I feel like that's what the last part of the piece is about. Is that somehow after having worked on all these dialogues in the whole beginning, we just felt like, phew, we have to really understand where our strength comes from in order to keep on going.
You know, we lost that mic. Whoa! Getting actually feedback, yeah.
Oh, great.
But for some...
it's hard to get this day.
We're engineers and announcers are scurrying around trying to deal with it. For some reason, that mic just...
Cut out,
I think.
Cut out?
Yeah, it definitely did. So we're going to keep working. You know what we might do, in fact? Dick is going to come in and take a... Why don't we go back to King of Hearts? And we'll go, Steve is going to look up something, and then maybe we get some coffee. And when we come back, perhaps we could do a few of the pieces and then break them down. I'm sure you do that anyway, and talk about how they work in that. So we're going to go away and come back shortly.
to Terry again? We should be a little bit...
yeah.
Must be out here.
Okay.
Well, that's right. The one thing that we have to mind. Mm. So the coffee is on its way. He said he would come in there, so I'm sure he will. Are we on the air?
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, this is the time between 4 and 6 called Praxis. I'm Paul McIsaac, and this afternoon here with me are six women who make up the Unity Players. And you can never really, when you have more than two people, people often have a hard time identifying the name with the voice. So if I suppose the only way that's going to really happen is coming down tonight at 8:30 to Studio C, which is at 359 East 62nd Street, where you can see the Unity Players. They're doing Touchpoint here tonight. And they'll also be doing it at West Beth this Wednesday and Thursday at 8 o'clock, which is at 155 Bank Street. So put these on. What we were talking about before is what do you call the pieces of the play? There are a lot of, I don't imagine you call them shticks or
dialogues
that we would, that the Unity Players, I think we're referring to, that to take some of that dialogue and do it in several different ways and then talk about what kind of power things going on or what the mechanisms are that are going on. And the conversation about that in itself was pretty interesting, but I never did get a good idea as to exactly what's happening. What did you decide?
We were thinking that we could try the letter. And in the performance, we play it only once, but in rehearsals, we've rehearsed it probably, I don't know, anywhere from 20 to 50 different ways with the same words. And we were thinking that maybe we could try playing it for you with different people, that Penny and I would play it once, and then Serena and I would play it once, and then maybe two more people would play it another way, and sort of show you how the same words can be used in a lot of different contexts.
We could do the third one with the mind, the intellectual conversation.
Why don't you and Jane do the third one?
Yeah.
Seeing as you obviously know what you're talking about.
Do you, Dave?
Who?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. That's right.
So you two are going to do it, and then...
The letter. First,
we should lean into the microphone there.
All right. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Oh, would you stop puttering and come help me write this letter to the paper?
Oh, you're always writing those complicated intellectual letters to the paper. I'm just trying to straighten up.
Would you care to talk about what that means?
Don't try to make me explain everything.
But how else is anything going to change around here? How else?
Well, you could stop writing your letter and help me straighten up, and then we could both work on it.
Problem is, you're never finished cleaning.
Oh, leave me alone.
All right, I'll stop bugging you.
Listen, I'm going to go out for a walk now, and when you're finished writing your letter, clean your ashtray.
Okay, I'll start.
How about stop puttering and helping me write this letter to the paper? Oh, you're always writing those complicated intellectual letters to the paper. I'm just trying to straighten up.
You want to talk about what that means?
Don't try to make me explain everything.
Well, how else would anything change around here?
Well, you could stop writing your letter
and
help me straighten up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could both work on it.
But you never finished cleaning.
Don't leave me alone.
Okay, I'll stop bugging.
Listen, I'm going to go out for a walk now, and when you're finished writing your letter, clean your ashtray.
Would you
stop puttering and help me write this letter to the paper?
Wait a minute, I don't know the line.
I just blanked. Really?
Wait a minute. You want me to try it?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
You do it? Okay.
Would you stop puttering around and help me write this letter to the paper?
Oh, you're always writing those complicated intellectual letters to the paper. I'm just trying to straighten up.
Would you like to talk about what that means?
Don't try to make me explain everything.
You know, how else is anything going to change?
Well, you could stop writing your letter and help me straighten up, and then we could both work on it.
Trouble is, you're never finished cleaning.
Why don't you leave me alone?
All right. I'll stop bugging you.
I'm going out for a walk now. When you're finished writing your letter to the paper,
Clean
your ashtray.
Is the difference, though, between... I mean, I'm not clear about where the differences are that we end up with, whether it's a difference between kinds of people who are coming out of kinds of angles. You know, one person, obviously... I'm confused because I saw a lot of different possibilities. One is that the second one just seemed really kind of intimate and playful and so forth, which I could... there's a manipulation there, too, but it's...
They both know it's happening.
They
both know
it,
right.
Yeah. And this thing here is like, I mean, that's just a very brutal kind of cold thing. I mean, that's my experience. But I'm wondering if that's a difference in the mechanics of control, or it's where different people are in different places in their emotional relationship to them. That's where
both,
I'm confused.
It's both.
Mm. Well, it's hard to sort of show it with just the voice, because I think that, like in the last one that was just done, it would probably be done with a lot of physical distance. Mm-hmm. And that it would be obvious that these people had a headspace and never really dealt with each other, that they had a kind of intellectual relationship maybe or something, and that they were mentally always aggravating each other. Whereas in the first one, which was equally hostile, but it was like more picky, and there might have been like maybe more physical contact or more like, mm-hmm. get out of my life kind of stuff, you know, like pickiness. Rather than distance.
I have to tell you that for myself, in seeing the piece twice, the two kinds of things that I was most struck with and remembered the most were the on-again, off-again, the exploration of I love you, I hate you. And I thought that's really, I don't know if you had thoughts or anything like that, mm-hmm. but it's going through my mind again that I thought was really good about, and I've always thought of it in the physical way of this and this. That it's actually, it feels to me as a physical thing of pushing away, and the minute the distance gets just a little too far, so it's insecurity, then it's the pulling back. Those kind of things I remember well. Did you choose one that speaks about that?
Well, we thought about doing I Love You, which is done with three people, and the physical setup is one person sitting in the middle, and then there's one person on either side. The person in the middle is saying I love you to one person on the one side of them, and then turning and saying it to the other person on the other side, and this the person in the middle says I love you, and one person on the right gives a response, and it's just a second glimpse of that relationship, and then I'm in the middle and I say I love you to the person on the left, and then they have a response to me. And it's just a very quick vision of millions of different ways that relationship of saying I love you, what those words, how you say them, how you use them, the kind of response that they evoke, the way that different people deal with that. And that actually is interesting. That came out of a dream that Libby had about saying, a dream where she was lying in her room and she had a vision of each person out of her... Well, maybe you should tell the dream.
Well, it was just sort of all the different people in my life who I might have said I love you to, or who I had thought about saying I love you to, came to me out of my past, and I realized that I said I love you to them in completely different ways and from different places inside myself, using it in different ways, sometimes from a place of weakness and insecurity, sometimes from a place of power, sometimes trying to get them to do something for me, sometimes trying to escape my responsibility towards them, and all different people, men, women, family, and people who I had never said it to before, who were just people I might have worked with or something like that. And it was really interesting to me how those words kept coming up.
I guess one thing we have to do is figure out some way to identify who the three people would be in an audio way, so that
You'll be able to tell.
Because I say I love you to Roz and to Jane, and it goes back and forth.
Okay. Ready?
I love you.
Me too.
I love you.
I love you too, Mommy.
I love you.
I wish you'd say that more often.
I love you.
I love you.
Not now.
I love you.
You're kidding.
I love you.
How do you know?
I love you.
Yeah? What'd you do? Just break a good dish?
I love you.
Do you like me?
But I love you.
We hardly know each other.
I love you.
Why?
I love you.
I know, but listen.
I love you.
Well, let's get it on.
I love you.
Too late.
I love you.
You don't say it enough.
I love you. I love you.
I love you.
That's like montage. I mean, it's just weird. Actually, there were times when I wished that it wasn't going so fast so I could, like...
Think about it,
right?
Yeah. Wow.
That's good.
You'll
have to see it tonight.
A lot of people who've seen this, or people who've seen this in the way it first struck me when I saw the piece 4 months ago before I ever became a member of Unity Players, and each dialogue really evoked an incredible response within myself of this realization of relationships that I've been in, that I see other people in, and no matter how it's played, there is usually some kind of reference point from which to identify. And I think that that's where the incredible power of comings and goings lies, is in that identity that most people will see, you know, beyond just the entertaining of them.
I think it's really important that there's a balance there, too, between our visions of what the relationship is about, and also at a certain point, it almost doesn't matter how we see the relationship, because what it strikes in people who are watching the play is really important too. So that you know, like you were saying, you wish it had gone slower. Almost just the awareness that there are the flash, that there are those many different ways that you say I love you to somebody, is like that seed is in your head and gives you the possibility now of hearing that in your life.
Makes you think about how you say I love you rather than how we say it.
Yeah, it was really private for me, you know, bringing that out, finding out that was a new public place to work on is really good.
The symphony of noises is the coffee. Which reminded me of something I did want to ask you. I mean, you're coming from Vermont into New York City.
We need the coffee.
I don't know if you want to ask us about it.
Yes, yes, for sure. Well, a lot of the, WBAI has a 90-mile radius, and a lot of the people listening right now do not live in New York City. They live in upstate New York. They live in Connecticut and Jersey and Long Island. They don't necessarily live here, so that it's a lot of different people. But I'm wondering what... Well, actually, when I saw Penny and Jane on Saturday, and then as I saw Libby today and Roz, you always get the feeling with people who've been for a long time out of the city, a little bit of... a little bit like they're coming into the foxhole. I mean, you know, that there's a sense of like they are in New York. You know, whether that may be with enjoyment, it's also with kind of excitement sometimes. You know, it's always great to be here. Or very much it's often with like, I don't know how you can take it, or it's really grim or something like that.
I love it.
Well, Roz, you've lived here, I mean, a long time. Maybe, do you think that makes a difference, that you're really at home here?
Oh, I love, I don't know.
Her
but
turf.
I really miss it. I feel more comfortable here than I do, I think, any other place.
Really?
And I'm more scared to walk in the woods at night by myself than I am down the street here. How's that?
For me, I was mostly scared about performing here. I felt the excitement about, you know, looking in the store windows and being on subways and stuff like that, as long as somebody was going to take care of me, because I have no idea how to get around or anything. But the part about performing in New York was just so, I had no idea what it would be like, because I always had this vision that, oh, people in New York go to the theater all the time, or people in New York have seen so many dancers and we're obviously not dancers, you know, and so many actresses and we're obviously not actresses, you know, and just getting really uptight about wearing a leotard and feeling like, you know, a big country woman. I'm not, you know, one of these slim model ladies, you know. And I just felt like,
listen,
you know.
Listen, we laugh. I felt the same way.
Really? And, you know, it's not that I don't think I'm beautiful or anything, but everybody in New York seems really, like, very, very aware of how they look and how beautiful they, you know, they are. And I don't know, in terms of the arts and everything, it just seemed really scary to be out there having people watch you who may have seen, like, in the last week may have seen 6 shows, you know, or something, and thinking, oh no, we're gonna feel like a skit, you know, or something.
Yeah. I had that fear that we were almost like a skit, you know, like just before the first performance and that last run through we had, I was very worried about how unprofessional we were, and that here we are in the Big Apple, the world center of these things,
right.
Of the arts, and I was very nervous about that, and I think it went very...
I don't feel it now, after having, you know, performed it, because I feel like people really got into it, you know, so I feel much more secure now than I did when I first came.
Well, the thing also that almost everyone who came to the performance felt like us. I mean, it totally broke down whatever any of those illusions were.
I think there's a lot of people in New York City that go to a party in New York City and go through the same kind of thing. I mean,
but are they,
you know,
aware,
I mean,
that they're going through them is another thing?
Oh, well, that would depend on them.
Yeah,
I know that there's that, you know, that whole either hipness or style or whatever the kind of terms you want to use, that that we tend to think there's the country and the city, but within the city itself, I'm sure there are people who go to Burlington that go through that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, to walk down the main street of Burlington is like a trip if you live in the Northeast Kingdom.
Mm-hmm,
or something.
Right. For me, the problem was that our politics are really around smashing professionalism, and that part of well,
what
that part of okay.
Oh no, sorry.
My fault.
You have to define.
Wait a minute.
You just got to define professionalism.
All right. Okay.